When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge, who somehow survived his sister's wedding to make it on the pod on a Monday, and JC Abbott. Hodge, how was the wedding, buddy?
It was great. Yeah, my baby sister got married to a wonderful guy. I mean, they've been together for many years, and yeah, it was a great opportunity to get the family together, have some fun. Enjoy the festivities. I wish it wasn't extraordinarily hot. It was like almost 40 with the Humidex, and wearing a suit in that is not fun, but it was still good. It was fun. Wouldn't change anything. Super happy for my sister and her husband.
JC, how was your weekend, dude?
I just worked, man. I just worked. It's football all the time. Somebody's got to run the site while John Hodge is out there carousing,
ripping up the dance
on wedding weekend in the sun. No, I'm locked in the basement watching football, writing about football. That's what my weekend is.
Whoosh, whoosh.
I would argue, JC, that you were at the best place to be in Canada this weekend because you were in the same building as Nathan Rourke.
That's true. I was within mere feet of him, Dunk. Be still my beating heart.
Man, I'm so jealous. Let's get going, boys. Today, we're discussing two rookie receivers bursting onto the CFL scene.
Winnipeg winning a second straight game.
Toronto shocking Montreal.
Two QB headshots garnering maximum fines.
The BC Lions giving free mullet haircuts.
And the Riders losing Jamarcus Hardrick to what appears to be a serious leg injury.
But first, the Edmonton Elks fell to 0-5 against the Ottawa Redblacks on Sunday night following some head-scratching late-game decisions from head coach and general manager Chris Jones. He didn't use his first timeout before the three-minute warning. Dakota Prukop ran his final touchdown plunge with 11 seconds left. The team kicked a one-point convert instead of going for the win on a two-pointer. And Boris Beedy appeared to be instructed to squib kick. JC, does Jones wear this latest loss?
Yes. Chris Jones wears this loss like he's worn all the other ones. And it's not specifically just because of the poor late-game management here. And it was extremely poor. Some of these decisions were absolutely baffling. It's because this is nothing new. It seems like every week, guys, the Edmonton Elks go into a football game. They're playing competitively. They have a chance to win or threaten a team that's ahead of them in the standings. And then somehow at the end of the game, one thing or the other goes wrong. A mistake here, a coaching decision there, and it all goes up in smoke. And when it's a different guy committing the error every week, or a different part of the team that's at fault, well, there's only one guy at the top managing everything, and that's Chris Jones. He's the one who goes shopping for the groceries. He's the one who sets it all together on the sideline, who should be in charge of overruling these decisions or making these calls. And when it came to the end of this game, once again, everything blew up in his face. I do not know how you don't tell Dakota Prukop the very last thing before he goes onto the field is milk that thing down to 2 seconds before you snap it. There is no reason why you snap that ball that early on that third down on a play that could decide the game. There is no reason for you to leave 8 seconds or 11 seconds on the clock for the other team to get another kickoff and potentially get another chance. And I know he took some of the blame off Boris Beattie after the game, said he was just trying to do too much. Boris Beattie hit a rouge on a kickoff earlier in that game. I know that sometimes coaches like to get cute and squib to throw off teams' return schemes, especially when they're facing someone dangerous, but just tell them to boot it. You could have won the game on that kickoff if you just told them to use all of that massive leg. Instead, they decide to get cute. It goes awry. Beattie tries to do too much, and it goes out of bounds. And it gives the Ottawa Redblacks a perfect opportunity to win. When that's happening every week, that's on the head coach.
Let the record show, fellas, that the term elksing or elking was coined during the Chris Jones era in Edmonton. Okay? That is exactly what happened in this football game. The Elks elked another one away, for lack of a better term. And it's just something that's been so consistent in this Chris Jones era. I don't know what it's going to take for the people currently running that team. I know he's an interim president, Rick LaLoche, sure. But to pull the shoot on Chris Jones, this team would be way better off with Jarius Jackson running it. It would be a breath of fresh air. And perhaps it would create even a small, small amount of excitement. Now, a lot of people are going to roll their eyes or shake their heads at me with my next comment here, but there were chants around the stadium of "we want Trey" and "let Trey play" at Commonwealth Stadium. That's not necessarily, in my opinion, an indictment on McLeod Bethel-Thompson, because I don't think he's been awful, and I don't think he should wear this 0-5 start in Edmonton. But the decision to bring him in, and by the end of the season, if he is the starter for the majority of the games, he'll make in and around $500,000, if not more. Instead of going with Trey Ford, who is on a bargain contract, would make less than $100,000, even if he started all 18 games this season, is a terrible decision. And I just can't understand why you would want to bench a quarterback, because that's essentially what they did to Trey Ford, who has 5 of your 8 wins during your tenure with the Elks. I just can't understand it. You know, Chris Jones has said multiple times, well, there's a reason why he's our backup quarterback. And it's like, no, dude, you could have spent that $500,000+ elsewhere to supplement this roster that is clearly not good enough. Perhaps maybe you should have spent it on upgrading the coaching staff or something, because there's an issue with this team that in late game situations, time and time again, since Chris Jones has been there, they have not gotten it done. He should go back to coaching high school at this point.
Well, maybe he will. Maybe in the state of Alabama later this year. We don't know. But at the end of the day, this Elks team, you know, year one, Chris Jones in Regina in 2016 burnt the whole thing to the ground and then built a winner. It wasn't the most exciting winner, right? It was a team that won with defense, with turnovers, right? It was, you know, a low-scoring, ground-and-pound team that bounce back between quarterbacks. Zach Kolaris was in, Brandon Bridge was in, Kevin Glenn was in, whatever. But they eventually won games. And he did the same thing when he came to Edmonton. He burnt the whole thing to the ground in 2022. I don't know this for a fact. I would imagine he went to leadership and said, hey, we're going to suck year one, but we're going to suck year one so that year two, we could be very competitive, and year three, we could win a championship. I think in year one, you have every excuse to not be good, which they weren't in 2022. They were miserable. Well, there's no excuses now. Chris Jones picked his coaching staff. He picked his players. He makes the decisions. And every week there are not large details, but still critical details, like the type of small decisions that end up deciding football games that this team gets laughably wrong. Like snapping that last plunge ahead of third, like the CFL, unlike the NFL, in the NFL, if the clock hits zeros, the game's done. In the CFL, the clock hits zeros, you still get one more play. Just wait for the clock to expire and snap the ball, and you go to overtime. Or you try the two-point convert, because statistically, teams do convert the two-point convert more than half the time. Do the two-point convert for the win, right? If your offense is clicking and Geno Lewis is going for the first time, and okay, we're paying almost $1 million for MBT and Geno anyway. Let's invest that money and give them a chance to win the game with a 2-point convert. They didn't do any of that, right? Every small mistake that they could have made from 20 seconds onward in the fourth quarter, which is the most key part of the game, they made that mistake. Like have you ever seen the GIF of Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons stepping on rakes? That was Chris Jones at the end of this game. Every single rake on the lawn, he found, he stepped on it, it smacked him in the face, and he went and he found the very next rake. It was awful, and my heart truly breaks for Elks fans because this team has been so bad. That stadium is so empty, and this was once the most proud team in the CFL, not just for a year or two, but for a generation. And I want this on the record. I believe Edmonton will get back to that. I fully 100% believe the Commonwealth Stadium will be full once again. Maybe not every single seat because that stadium is absolutely gigantic, but it will one day lead the CFL in attendance again. The fans will come back. That team will win games. But it's unfortunate that after so many awful seasons, this team is again 0-5. And I will echo Justin's sentiments with Trey Ford. This team, under Chris Jones, during this latest era, from the start of the 2022 season onward, with Trey in the starting lineup, is 5-8. Without him, they are 3-24, including 0-5 with McLeod at the helm. The fact that they don't have Trey doing anything and
he's
just
not good enough,
on the bench.
Trey Ford just ain't good enough.
Well, newsflash, Chris Jones ain't good enough, and maybe he doesn't have the right anymore to decide who is or is not good enough. Like, this is a guy who practices his team more than anybody else in the league, and then randomly in week six will be like, you know what we should do? We should sign Derek Moncrief, who was awful last year, and not just have him on the field a little bit. We should start him at strong side linebacker. Like, that is an insane decision for a team that, again, practices more than any other team in the CFL, especially during camp, really pushes their players, which has had problems from them in the past with injuries ahead of the regular season. But the decision makings is completely baffling. It doesn't make any sense. And any benefit of the doubt that Chris Jones once had as a Grey Cup winning head coach from 2015 has long since evaporated.
Let's make one thing clear. I think I speak for both of you when we say McLeod Bethel Thompson, probably the better pure quarterback right now than Trey Ford. But two things are absolutely baffling to me about that situation. Number one, Trey Ford is a weapon unlike any other in this league. And I would argue only similar to a handful of players in all of pro football in terms of what he can do athletically. And you're giving him no plays, no snaps, no package looks. How many teams around the CFL are out there with far less athletic quarterbacks coming in for certain packages, playing a part in their team's game plan? And the Edmonton Elks, who know what they have in Trey Ford, it's not a secret, aren't doing anything to maximize that. That is absolutely egregious, in my opinion. On the fact of him starting, I don't have an issue with them choosing McLeod Bethel Thompson, but the problem is financial, right? This was not a team that didn't have holes elsewhere. And instead, the Elks decided, despite the fact that they had a competent quarterback that had proven he could win games, to go out and spend big money on Macbeth. Normally, that's something I endorse for a football team. You always want to get better at the quarterback position. But they could have spent that $500,000 on their defense, which has been consistently atrocious, which hasn't gotten better throughout this Chris Jones era, and is supposed to be his trademark. Let me ask you this, guys, because you brought up bringing in Derek Moncrief and Sean Oakman this week, both of whom, by the way, the Elks could have gotten in free agency earlier, or in fact paid for better players with the money they spent on Macbeth. But Chris Jones was known for finding diamonds in the rough when he was in Saskatchewan. That was his thing. Has he found one in Edmonton? Can you name a single star on that Edmonton Elks defense? Is there somebody you'd stick your flag in and say, this guy over the next 5 to 10 years is going to be a marquee name in the CFL. Their best player is probably Lucchese Purifoy, and he was already well established. There's some decent players. There's some functional players. He has not found any defensive stars at this point. That is a failing of his from the top down.
I'd maybe point at Noah Curtis as a guy.
The only player that comes to mind for me is Kai Gray, I was going to say.
Okay, yeah, Kai Gray is a decent corner. Fair.
Both of those guys are good, but are they guys who are going to be stars in this league for a long time?
No.
Right?
No. Well, and they traded away a star in Jake Ceresna, so...
Like, there's no A.C. Leonard here that he took from tight end and converted to DN. There's none of the guys that he discovered when he was in Saskatchewan or Edmonton, those great defensive teams that were sending guys to the NFL. It's just been constant turnover of subpar defensive backs, for the most part, that he's recycled from all over the place. And nobody has stood up and said, hey, I'm a star. I'm going to be the heartbeat of this defense. It just seems like a failure of scouting and a failure of personnel usage. Well,
part of that, though, is because Chris Jones didn't do any off-season open workouts this past off-season, which used to be a huge staple of his off-season scouting regime. And I don't think it's been reported why he didn't do any off-season open tryouts. So I don't know. I wonder why he chose not to this year. It's interesting.
Guys, the thing to me about Chris Jones and turning over the roster all the time, it doesn't allow players to correct mistakes. Now, sometimes I should say he does have his guys that he sticks with through thick and thin. But when you continually turn over the roster, those players are lacking confidence because they're thinking, if I make one little mistake, I could be gone tomorrow, you know? Dining on Delta, as they say. And I think that's been a major issue with Chris Jones, whereas look at the difference, and I know it's easy to say right now, but that Corey Mace has made in Saskatchewan. He wants those guys to show emotion. He's committed to the players that are on that team. And even though, let's say, for example, a Marcus Sales had a couple coverage busts in his first game with the team, he stuck with them. And I think that has paid dividends for not just Mace, but for coaches around the league. Chris Jones would just say, hey, we're going to get you out of here and bring in the next guy. But that doesn't build a cohesive team atmosphere. I actually think that is one of the things that has taken away and been a major reason as to why Jones has not had really any success during his tenure in Edmonton.
By the way, before we go on, I think we should update the phrase dining with Delta, because I can't speak for Delta specifically, but they don't really feed you on airplanes anymore. So maybe we should go with something like loses your luggage with WestJet, or like drinks half a cup of Diet Coke on Air Canada. Like, these are the type of experiences that we get on it. Or like getting sore knees on WestJet, or you know, like getting a hip cramp. Hey, those seats are tiny, bro. I'm 6'2".
Those are your type of experiences because you're a big man.
I need room. The seats are tiny.
Dunk is just snug as a bug in a rug in an airplane, isn't he? Tiny little man.
Well, Dunk described himself
as a little
wiener.
But even you know what I don't
But even
like.
You don't have enough room on a plane, I bet.
See, I like being cramped, though. Like, I'm very comforted by, like, being forced into a tiny little ball.
What?
Yeah.
I was actually asking Justin this question, but thank you for providing a honest and disturbing answer.
I don't like being cramped by big people on planes, man. I'm not a sizist, I guess, as you would say. But some people got to learn the rules, okay? No footsies, all right? I don't want to touch your knee the whole time on the plane. And can we come up with some sort of etiquette for the armrest? Something. I don't care what it is, but people need to be more self-aware on planes. I got people swinging bags around, catching me in the face, hitting me with elbows when they're taking off their coats. Like, can we just be a little bit more aware that there are some other people in a confined area. End of rant.
My favorite part of flying is the people who not only appear to have never flown anywhere, but appear to have never left their house before. Like, they get on the plane and it's like, oh, I guess I need to take off my coat. And oh, wait, before I take off my coat, I have to take off my bag. And oh, before I take off my bag, I have to make sure that the thing is down before. And it's like, we all waited for 90 minutes for this moment. Did no part of your brain go, maybe I should take off my coat before we get on the plane?
I just,
because like this is a basic element of air travel, which should be a very simple process, but the average person doesn't seem to be capable of doing it.
Personally, I think there's a special place in hell for people who put multiple carry-on bags in the overhead bin and screw over other people just so they don't have to put it under the seat in front of him. That is my biggest pet peeve on a plane. Everything else I can deal with. Every time I see somebody do that and take up a whole overhead bin with their personal item and their luggage, and then they throw in like four jackets in there, like Hodge said, I want to lose my mind. That is a crime against your fellow passengers.
I don't disagree.
Be prepared to fly, people. I'll say this. My last flight out to Saskatchewan, they were playing the Toronto Argonauts. There was actually, you know, at least a handful of Argos fans going out there for the game. Steve Cody, who, you know, was very, what would the word be? Excitable on Twitter. Sometimes he gets a little bit angry, but that's okay.
That's a very kind word. As well as these, that's a very kind word.
Other Argos fans. But in person, he's such a nice guy. We had a great conversation. But I'll say, you know, those CFL fans were very orderly on the plane. So I think a lot of people, if you're flying for the first time and you see somebody with CFL gear on, just do what they do, okay? Because they're probably doing it the right way, at least if they were these group of Argos fans on this plane. And because, JC, I'll kind of second that. I'm not so much pet peeving about people packing up the overhead bin, although I think there should be some common courtesy that everybody at least gets a place on those things. It's more to what Hodge said. Understand that before you get on this plane here, you could take your coat off because you're inside waiting for the plane. All right. Understand that when you're getting on the plane, that you have a game plan of putting your bag away, sitting down in your seat in a timely order to keep it moving, because the quicker we get on, the quicker we all get off. I just can't comprehend how people time and time again just can't understand this. And another one that I don't understand is people that come and say, oh, I'm sitting beside you because I like to sit in the aisle. I'm sitting in the middle seat or the window seat. And I'm like, dude or ma'am, you have to move so I can get up to let you get in there. Like, I don't understand what people don't understand about these simple everyday things.
They just want to be nice and tight and rub past your chiseled physique, Duck.
I don't know what it is, but I can only suck in so much.
With the overhead bin, why don't we just have, instead of gigantic bins, like width-wise, just put in little dividers? So it's like, this is the overhead bin for seat 13A. This is the little bin for 13B. Because like, they're super picky about when you load the plane and where you sit. And then all of a sudden comes time for the overhead bin and it's like, oh, it's the whole plane. Just chuck your crap wherever you want. Doesn't matter. And nobody seems, it's like, just put little dividers in. This is the overhead bin for 13A. And if you get
Air
to 13A
Canada,
and there's
West
crap
Jet,
in your
get
bin,
this man on the phone.
You take that crap and you throw it on the ground and you say, someone's in my bin. This is my bin. And you put your crap in your bin and then you sit in your chair. And if the stuff is still on the floor and the plane takes off, they just throw it out the window.
This is the commercial air travel podcast by 3Down.
Throw it out the window. Chuck it out the window. Wait till you're over water for safety reasons, but then throw it out the window. If somebody can't put their crap in their own overhead bin, they don't deserve their crap.
I like to think of my things as stuff, not crap. You know, crap makes it
if it's
seem
on
like
the floor, it's crap. If it's in the overhead bin, it's stuff. I'll tell you if, what, if you
if
go
I
through
place
the
it on the floor, it's crap.
If you go through the crap and there's something of value, it can be donated to charity. I'm okay with that. But anything else, ocean. That's where it's going.
Or lake. I don't want to have to go through any crap ever in my life because that sounds disgusting.
It's figurative. It's figurative crap.
You live like a farm, Doug. Don't you have to like shovel like manure and do all that farmer stuff? Or is that
on a farm, and my brother and dad and family run the farm, but I ain't about that life anymore.
You're too pretty now.
Too dainty to shovel manure.
And I say that, Hodge, because when I think of that, I think it was my cousin who like slipped and fell one day and like came all the way up to, I think it was his shoulders in pig manure or cow manure. And it was like one of the grossest things I've ever seen, even though I was around it all the time and, you know, still am from kind of time to time. But I was like, oh my God. So when I think of going through crap, that's what goes through my mind.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Blue Bombers have won two straight games after opening the season with four consecutive losses. They went from crap to stuff. Zach Collaros had his best game in 2024, throwing for over 300 yards and two touchdowns, with the defense forcing three takeaways for the second straight game. Can the Bombers still compete for first place in the West Division?
That is a big question. I don't think they can reasonably compete for first in the West Division, only because I don't see this team catching BC. To do that, they would essentially have to win not just one, but both of the games in their upcoming home and home. The Blue Bombers are in Regina this week. They've got to go to Toronto after that, and then they got the home and home with BC. So not an easy schedule coming up. I think they deserve credit for both wins. I still see this as a playoff team, possibly even a home playoff team. I think first in the West is probably too much to ask for. I will say the most encouraging thing for me, obviously we'll get into the play of Ontario Wilson a little bit later, but the offense for really the first time this season looked like it was clicking on the ground. It was clicking through the air. The offensive line is playing better. Zach Collaros is doing a much better job of spreading the football around, because this defense through the first five games of the year, statistically, was actually closer to the top of the league than the bottom. The issue is this team just wasn't scoring any points. Now, defensively, they had some breakdowns. It was their worst defensive effort of the season against what, up until this past week, had been a pretty mediocre Calgary Stampeders offense. But if the defense can find its level right from the first few weeks of the season, and the offense can keep clicking, I think that this team, despite the 0-4 start, is, dare I say, an above 500 football team. But again, they've got a tough schedule coming up. No disrespect to Ottawa and Calgary. Those are not the two toughest outs of the CFL. Going to Saskatchewan is a tough test. Going to Toronto is a tough test. And then BC back-to-back will be the toughest of those tests.
When it comes to Winnipeg finishing first, I will say unlikely, but still possible. At this stage in the season, you can't rule anything out. And for me, it boils down to injuries and health, particularly at the quarterback position, right? As we've gone through this first quarter of the season, the Lions and the Riders have run away with it, but the Riders are already starting to come back down to earth a little bit because they'd lost Trevor Harris for an extended period of time. Shea Patterson has been competent. Their defense has stepped up on multiple occasions. They've gotten big plays when they needed to, but I'm sure they'll finish this long stretch without Harris with a 500 or less record, which will open the door up into second. And for the BC Lions, yes, they're flying high, but if Werner Adams Jr. goes down, knock on wood here, for any extended period of time, is Jake Delagala going to have the same success with that offense? I think if you look around the league, there are very few teams where if the backup quarterback has to play, you'll say that team isn't going to fall back down and have a worse record with them at the helm. So if the Blue Bombers can stay healthy, keep trending in the right direction, and one or both of the franchises in front of them have some of those injury issues, they can leapfrog people fairly quickly, even with the fact that they now are in a bit of a hole because of their 0-4 start. Anything can happen in the CFL. And I know with all that experience on that team and with the way Mike O'Shea coaches it, that's what they're preaching, is take care of their job, their responsibilities, win their games, and you might just get lucky with what happens with other teams.
Winnipeg will make the playoffs for sure. I don't think that will shock anyone in terms of a statement, because I think obviously Edmonton is awful and Calgary, you know, I just am not seeing it with Jake Mayer at quarterback. I think there's some other really good pieces on the roster there on defense and their skill players. The offensive line is solid, but if Mayer's going to be their quarterback, or even if it's Matt Schilt, I just don't see it, you know, unless he takes a couple big steps forward. So that puts Winnipeg in. And I think, Hodge, you're right in the sense that the Bombers could actually host a home playoff game and get second in the West and perhaps even be competing for first, depending what happens here. We've seen the Lions in past seasons have issues with the Bombers' physicality. I don't think the Bombers' offensive line is quite what it once was, especially with Jamarcus Hardrick gone there and some less experienced players there in the past, and Stanley Bryant on the way down, though he's still playing, I think, some decent quality football considering the lack of left tackles in pro football as a whole. So I do think that it's not out of the realm of possibility that Winnipeg could be in first place come season's end, especially with Mike O'Shea's experience and the way that this team finds a way, I think, consistently to bounce back from adversity. Zach Claris was obviously angry, wanted to come out and have a performance that cemented his status, but he needs to continue performing at that level that we're used to seeing from Claris for them to have a real shot to get a home playoff game and to be in the mix for first place.
The one area I think Winnipeg has to improve the most is along the defensive line. I think Winnipeg's linebacking core is very good. I think the secondary is one of the best in the CFL. But that was the thing that really stuck out to me. Jake Mayer is arguably the least mobile quarterback in the CFL, at least when it comes to the starters. And he had all day to throw for the first 57 minutes of that game. And I want to give him some credit. I've been tough on Jake Mayer. Want to give him full credit for some of the throws that he made. The touchdown pass, the first one that he threw, I thought was sensational. You know, he's shown some flashes. I'm still not a long-term believer in Jake Mayer. But Winnipeg's defense, at least for that front four, has been completely unable to generate pressure on its own. Credit Jake Thomas for having a game-sealing sack in the late goings. I asked Jake after the game about it, and he said, quote, "I hadn't done much the whole game, so it was good to get one," close quote, which I thought was a bit of a telling statement from the man himself. Willie Jefferson, I thought, was really good against Ottawa. Other than that, through the first six games, he's not been very noticeable, which is not what we've come to expect from a guy who I think is going to be a Hall of Famer when he finishes his career, right? Five-time CFL All-Star. You know, he's not been very noticeable. Certainly wasn't against Calgary. So I need to see more from that defensive front. But if the offense can keep clicking, which it seems like Zach Collaros is working himself out of a funk, it seems like they found a really young, exciting receiver. Brady Oliveira back-to-back 100-yard games behind an offensive line that's starting to gel, though I do agree with Dunk, it's not as good as it has been in the past. You know, they're getting Taiwan Garbutt, who's a relatively young defensive end, back this week. He's going to probably make his first start of the season. Maybe he is that linchpin that they need to find, but if he's not the answer, I think Winnipeg, that is the number one thing on their list. We need to find somebody who can help us get after the passer, because right now, when it comes to just getting pressure with your front four, Winnipeg, I think, would be close to the bottom of the CFL's nine teams, right, when it comes to a per-rate pressure basis.
Yeah, I mean, they go into last week, and Owen Hubert has the start, the kick out of McMaster that they took in, was it round seven or round eight, Hodge?
He was the second last pick in the draft. He was he was late eighth rounder.
And I got a chance to talk with Owen Hubert. Great kid. I think he has exceeded a lot of people's expectations, and that doesn't really shock me based on my conversation with him. But certainly not a guy that you had penciled in as someone who should be starting for your football team at this stage in the season. And that's not a knock on him. That's just reality. It's a young group up front for Winnipeg. And certainly I think there are a couple spots for different teams around the league that are circled for big time improvement when NFL training camps come, you know, at the end of the summer, and there's a bunch of cuts and there's the potential to expand your practice roster and bring up some new bodies and take a look at some new guys. I think the defensive line for Winnipeg is one of those position groups that's going to potentially get a few new faces brought in by that scouting group to see if they can add somebody down the stretch, because they're young, they're inexperienced, they haven't quite found those breakout stars yet, and they've also been banged up, right? Celestin Haba has been injured. Taiwan Garbutt, as you mentioned, has been injured. So we haven't necessarily seen them at full strength, but certainly some additions needed there to rush the passer in Winnipeg. The Argonauts knocked off the Alouettes in shocking fashion this week, getting a touchdown on defense and special teams to beat the home side 37-18 as Cody Fajardo left with an apparent hamstring injury. Is it possible people crowned the Alouettes too soon?
It could be, but this team is much different without Cody Fajardo at quarterback. I think he's become a great leader for that team overall, and it's just a different feel with Caleb Evans in there. That's no slight to him as a quarterback or a player, but when you lose your starting quarterback, as Hodge talked about earlier, with any team in the league, it's going to be difficult to compete at your top level. I do think the Alouettes have been full value. They were the number one team in a lot of people's power rankings until this loss to the Argonauts put BC in that spot, at least for Three Down Nation's power rankings on the season. But I do think there is something to be said about this Toronto Argonauts team that has played Montreal a bunch of times in recent years. Some of those games have been close. The East Final last year was not one of those. The Alouettes absolutely ran it up at BMO Field. But I think if you look at the numbers, that usually the games between those teams are close, but the Argos absolutely blew them out on their home turf, Fajardo or not. So there's definitely work to do here. You're not just going to show up and be the Montreal Alouettes because you're the defending Grey Cup champions and win every game the next season. And much like Corey Mace talked about with the Riders, I think this loss in the long term could be beneficial for the Alouettes.
I don't think it is possible to go undefeated in the CFL. I also don't think it's possible to win 17 games in the CFL. I think the CFL season is too long to do that. It is more of a marathon than a sprint. We've said that many times on the show. I don't think I saw anybody seriously predict that the Alouettes were going to go undefeated because, again, I think it's actually impossible to do that. But if anybody was starting to think that after a 5-0 start, they got a big reality check this past week. Do I still think the Alouettes are a better football team than the Argonauts? Yes. That being said, the Alouettes simply went into Percival Molson and completely ate the Alouettes' lunch. They ate all the poutine. They ate all the steamies. They ate all of the shawarma. They ate all of the delicious food offerings that the province of Quebec has. And they didn't do it with Cameron Dukes. Right? Cameron Dukes threw for 131 yards in this game. He played mistake-free football, but this was a ground-and-pound game. Kadeem carried 94 yards along the ground. Daniel Adebaboye, 29 yards along the ground. Deonta McMahon had a rushing touchdown. And they did it, of course, on defense and special teams. Janarian Grant gets his 10th return touchdown in only 46 career games. Boys, I'm about to say something. I'd like your reaction on it. JC, I'll start with you. Is Janarian Grant a Hall of Fame player?
Not quite, but if he keeps up this pace, he could be, right? And it's strange because where is that bar for a return-specific player? Because the bar can't be Gizmo Williams, right? His numbers are simply insane, unattainable, right? But Janarian Grant, we saw Brandon Banks talk about it on Twitter. He's going to pass Brandon Banks at some point for return touchdowns. I think there's a legitimate chance he only needs 5 more touchdowns to be second all time behind Gizmo Williams. If you do that, are you good enough to be a Hall of Famer if you're second all time, even if you don't have an impact on offense? I would say yes, just because of how big the return game is in the CFL, but I think it will be a tough sell for some people.
I don't think he's a Hall of Famer yet, and I'm not great at these things. You guys know I don't really like doing rankings because it takes me so long. There are some things that I think. Nathan Rourke is the greatest Canadian quarterback of all
Russ
time.
Russ Jackson exists. Friendly reminder. What are you talking about?
I know he does, but I'm talking about my era, and recency bias has crept in. All due respect to Russ Jackson. He's always treated me well. The thing I don't understand, though, with Janarian Grant, guys, is the fact that he was a free agent for so long. Like, why did the Winnipeg Blue Bombers not bring this guy back? Hodge, can you ask Michael Shea that question? I want the real hard-hitting story. Why did some of the other teams in the CFL not go try to sign this guy? And he ends up with Toronto. And he looks great. He's helping them win games in a major way. And this guy was a free agent for way too long past February.
Well, Kyle Walters, in February, when he was asked, seemed to indicate that Janarian, like, wasn't responding to the team's communication. Like, it seemed like he was a bit MIA, which was kind of weird. And then he signed, like, in May. So he was a free agent for 3 months. And I know some Bomber fans have said, like, well, of course the Bombers couldn't bring him back because they signed all these other guys and they didn't have any money. Well, as I reported in my post-game article, Janarian Grant is going to make $84,000 in hard money this year. Upwards, with full incentives, his deal is worth $92,000. So he is an absolute steal and a half for the Boatmen. And I'm looking forward to, when Toronto comes to Winnipeg, as I'm sure the rest of the Winnipeg media is, to talk to Janarian Grant about it. The downside is they don't come to Winnipeg until October 11th. So there's a long time coming. Maybe we'll see if we can get a phone interview with Janarian Grant. But regardless, obviously the Bombers miss him. And I think, honestly, 8 teams in the CFL would be improved with Janarian Grant back there. I'm in agreement with both of you, by the way. Right now, I don't think he is. But when you look up the rate at which the CFL's greatest returners of all time, guys like Bashir Levington and Keith Stokes, and of course Henry Gizmo Williams, who is the unquestioned number one ever, had return touchdowns, Janarian is better than all of them. And for some of them, he is like head and shoulders better. Like, he is averaging a return touchdown every 4.5 games, which is an unbelievable mark. And by the way, that doesn't include the playoff return touchdowns that he had, right? He had one in the West Final in 2022. He had one in the Grey Cup game in 2022, which I would hope are taken into account if and when he is a serious Hall of Fame candidate someday. But regardless, the Argonauts, getting back to the original point, Winton McManus, a sensational pick six. The Alouettes win games on defense, and apparently the way to beat them is say, well, we're going to score touchdowns against not your defense. We're going to score touchdowns against your offense. We're going to score touchdowns against your special teams, and then good luck trying to catch us. So I enjoyed this game, and I will say one more thing about it. This was a good game for the CFL, not just because the RDS rating was insane. Dunk, you'll talk about that later on in the show, but because had the Alouettes won this game, they would have secured the season series against the Toronto Argonauts, which essentially would have meant that they'd won the East at 6-0, right? I don't think it's in the best interest of anybody. Like, last year, we saw the Toronto Argonauts run away with this division. I don't think it's in the best interest of anybody to have a team be that far ahead. This way, the season series between these two clubs will not be decided until September 28th in Week 17, which is an appropriate time of year to be thinking about such things. So the season series is split right now at one game apiece, and I'm excited to see this race play out. And fortunately, it is an actual race, not just a one-horse race, so to speak.
Yeah. The more immediate question is not who's going to win the East Division. It's how healthy is Cody Fajardo going to be? What's the severity of his injury? And will he miss any time? Jason Moss didn't really provide an update on Fajardo's status after the game. The Alouettes are on bye this week, so I doubt we're going to get much out of their camp, if anything at all, until they return to practice next week. But it seemed like it was a substantial hamstring injury, right? He had to go to the locker room, did not return. And those types of injuries can be a little finicky, right? Sometimes you can miss 4 to 6 weeks with something like that. Now, I know Cody Fajardo is tough as nails. He's going to try and play through anything. But can the Alouettes be the same team if he is not able to play? I don't think they can be quite the same team. But I would like to take a few minutes just to have a defense of Caleb Evans, because he didn't have his best game coming in relief against the Argos. But I think he gets underrated as a quarterback. He has a ton of starting experience from his time in Ottawa, despite being very, very young as many of the first-time starters in the league right now. I think he's just turned 27. And he's shown me at multiple points in his career that he's competent. I think he can keep the Alouettes at least afloat if he has to step in there for 4 or 5 or 6 games if Fajardo's injury is serious. And I'll go a step further and say, I think the Alouettes have one of, if not the best, quarterback situations in the league, period. Because from Fajardo, you get to a very experienced backup in Caleb Evans, who I think is underrated. Their third stringer, Davis Alexander, has shown some real flashes in preseason. And I know our contributor, Pablo Herrera-Vergara, is a big fan of his and wants him to actually start over Caleb Evans. And I think there's potential there. And then they've got James Morgan on the practice roster, who is a big-time prospect coming into the CFL, and I know a lot of people are high on as well. So you go down the list, all four quarterbacks are at the very least intriguing prospects, if not competent players. I think that's a good situation as any for the Alouettes to be in if Fajardo has to miss time.
The Red Blacks have their hand up and want to talk about their quarterback depth chart, JC.
There's a lot of bodies on it. I'll give the Red Blacks that. There's a lot of bodies on that Red Blacks depth chart.
What about the Edmonton Elks with Trey Ford? We were just talking about Trey Ford the whole show.
Well, I'm talking about the whole thing as a whole, and beyond Trey Ford.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the depth.
Dakota Prukop is a short yardage only guy. I'm trying to remember who they've got as their.
They got Jarrett Daigie there.
They got Jarrett Daigie.
That's
all right.
Teach me how to Daigie. Teach me how to Daigie.
I mean, there are certain contenders. Don't get me wrong, but I think the Alouettes have certainly a quarterback room that should be in the mix when you talk about the most solid from top down in the league.
Okay.
Oh, what about the Bombers? You going to stick up for your hometown team?
No.
Really?
You not a Terry Wilson stan?
I thought Terry Wilson was sensational in the first preseason game. He was awful in the second one, but it's such a small sample size. I don't really have an opinion on him yet. I need to see more. And Chris Streveler, I think, is great on like a short-term basis, like we saw in the Ottawa game, where you build a game plan just around his skill set. And I think that he is a tremendous weapon to bring in as, you know, kind of a change of pace guy. Do I think that the team can win sustainably with him as the starting quarterback? The answer is no. And I think the Winnipeg Blue Bombers agree, because the last time that happened in 2019, the club lost more games than they won, and they traded for Zach Kolaris, right? And that was what propelled them to a Grey Cup championship. So I think Kolaris is starting to play better. I like, again, Chris Streveler as a short-term guy. Terry Wilson, haven't seen enough. Something I will also be critical of the team for. I think they're nuts for not having a practice roster quarterback, at the very least, just somebody in the building who might have a crazy growth trajectory, or a guy who, you know, at the very least knows the system, if, dare I say, somebody sustains a serious injury. So that's something that has never made sense to me about Winnipeg. They've generally not had a practice roster quarterback for years, which is weird.
Two rookie receivers had breakout performances in Week 6 as Ontario Wilson made 13 catches for 201 yards and one touchdown for the Bombers, while Khalil Pimpleton, the Pimple Popped, caught four passes for 153 yards and one touchdown for the Red Blacks. Which one impressed you more and why?
Well, I was talking to somebody literally last week who said if Khalil Pimpleton ever gets into the roster for the Ottawa Red Blacks, he will be impossible to take off the roster. The comp is Brandon Banks, and he certainly looked like Brandon Banks when he ripped that touchdown for over 70 yards down the sideline, outrunning all the angles from Edmonton's defenders. That being said, to me, the answer is Ontario Wilson, and I want to take, dare I say, a bit of a victory lap here, because I'd been very critical of Zach Collaros for not using his entire receiving core. I made a point during the home game against BC to watch Ontario Wilson, and I often notice down the field, like, Zach's not throwing to him, but this guy, his routes are really crisp, and he knows how to flash hands late. He looks like a guy who should be getting the ball. And lo and behold, Zach went from not throwing to him at all, 8 targets in 4 games, to throwing the ball to him 16 times. He doubled the targets from the first 4 games in a single game. 16 targets, and he goes for over 200 yards. They almost had well over that, like that second touchdown pass, or would-be second touchdown pass, with the wind at Zach's back, was like inches away from the outstretched fingertips of Ontario Wilson, who everybody simply calls Pokey, so I'll be calling him Pokey here as well. Winnipeg desperately needed a receiver to step up. With Dalton Schoen out for the season, with Kenny Lawler still out for the foreseeable future, though it's been a while since we got a formal update on his status, I can tell you he's around the team. I talked to him at all the games. He's still his gregarious self, wanting to chat in the locker room and stuff like that and say hi to everybody. He's probably not that far away. I don't think he's in a cast anymore. But regardless, Ontario Pokey Wilson had a breakout performance for the century. The only thing that was lousy about these two performances, boys, is they came in the same week, because at 3-Down, we award Breakout Player of the Week every week. And one of these guys can't get it. Only one of them can. So
why not? It could be co-breakout players.
We've never done that before. I suppose we could, but when you look at some of the previous...
First time for everything, my man.
Yeah, that's true. But when you look at the previous winners we've had, I think both of these performances would beat all the other performances that we've awarded so far this season. So it's a shame that they happened in the same week, but it's good news for CFL fans, right? Young receivers stepping up, making incredible plays, is only going to help the value of the entertainment in this league.
Pokey Wilson, of course, got his nickname from his grandmother, who, when he was a baby, thought he looked like a Pokemon. So she called him Pokey, but during this game, he looked like another video game character. He was Kirby, because he was sucking in balls all over, left and right. 13 catches for 201 yards. Get your mind down to the gutter, Justin Dunk. But
what?
Sucking in balls. Sucking in balls like Kirby.
Yeah.
Anyway, Zach Collaros was forced feeding him, though, throughout the evening. And that's why I actually think the more impressive performance was Khalil Pimpleton, the Zit, who showed that he is absolutely a speedster, because it was his very first CFL game. And when he broke out on that touchdown, the burst, the acceleration, the speed, it's been since prime Brandon Banks that we saw somebody take off like that, with that burst in the CFL game. He only had the 4 catches, but again, first ever game, he's going to get a lot more going forward. And I don't know, with all the hype that was coming out of him from the Redbacks camp, I know you've got veterans, but how was this guy not on the field in week 1? How was he not starting from the start of the season? To me, this proved that he should have been, and I think we're going to be talking about Khalil Pimpleton as a candidate, potentially, for Rookie of the Year when we get to the end of the season.
More of. I'm not saying there's not fast guys there as playmakers already, but that dude's speed, acceleration, was unbelievable, guys. Usually that's a crossing route that picks you up a first down, but this guy turned it up the sideline, and the most impressive thing was him outrunning multiple defenders' angles. Now, possibly that's because he's a rookie. There's no tape out there on him in terms of gain speed at the CFL level, so guys thought they maybe needed to take a flatter angle instead of a steeper angle, but he burned his way down the sideline on a play that we've not seen that kind of speed definitely since Brandon Banks, but flash in a long time. And that was unbelievable. Pimpleton seems like he has a lot of upside, but he's got to stack games together. It will be a real key, but a great debut. For me, though, Ontario Wilson's debut, Pokey, as I guess we're all calling him now, was the one that was better, because to earn the trust of Zach Collaros, you have to put in the work behind the scenes. I'm not saying Pimpleton didn't, but I think Wilson getting that many targets in one game, as Hodge noted, really speaks to what he's doing in terms of preparing for each of the Bombers game this season. And that's why Collaros can trust him to feed him the ball that much. I think both of these guys can go on to have great seasons, but they got to continue to prove it. What's the saying I was going to say? One game does not a season make.
One thing I will say about Pokey is after the game, he was, of course, swarmed at his stall in the locker room. And for those who weren't there, it was 40 degrees with the Humidex at kickoff in Winnipeg. It was unbelievably hot. And as he was answering questions from his stall, Drew Olatarski, who's a couple stalls down, walked behind the media and he said, "Well, the craziest thing is this guy's from Georgia. He's not even sweating." And you look at Pokey, and sure enough, he's like bone dry. Like he's sitting in his locker and he's just smiling. And it looks like he just went out for a walk in like a 20 degree weather. And Drew Olatarski, who was raised in California, but played collegiately in Minnesota and is, I think, a Winnipegger at heart. He's now been with the Bombers for six seasons. Looked like he just run through the sprinkler out on the yard. He was fighting for his life post-game, unbelievably overheated. I felt the same way, and I was sitting in the press box, much less running around on the field going nuts. So Pokey, not only 200 yards, but did it without breaking a sweat. I'm not sure how he's going to handle it at the end of the year when he might have to play in sub-zero temperatures. I'm not sure he's even seen snow before in his life. He's from Georgia, played collegiately in Florida, and then had an NFL stint in Los Angeles. So that might be the furthest north he's ever been. I don't know, before Winnipeg. But regardless, he's taken his Pokemon type advantage with the heat and pouring that heat on opposing defenders right now.
That is very impressive.
JC Brothers, no way Pimpleton could have been on the field in week one because the Red Blacks didn't even play, okay?
Okay, game one, Doug. You know what I mean. He's taken off.
I wonder if the zit is going to stick.
Okay.
I like that.
I think we need, as we all know, we make things run in the CFL. Three Down Nation, we run this league. We are the voice that you come to listen to.
We need to be
proactive in creating more nicknames. The CFL used to have great nicknames. We have poor nicknames these days. We need to, as a collective, come together and force some great nicknames for these players. Start with the Zit, Khalil Pimpleton.
Okay, but you don't decide them. Because Moose McInnes,
And
the zit makes me think of, you know, there's those people out there that like popping pimples.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Even watch videos on it.
Oh,
I think of that
so
disgusting
good.
Stuff.
Oh,
so I don't want to tag Pimpleton with popping the pimple or the zit. JC, you're disgusting, bro. That disgusts me.
It's his acceleration, though. It's like popping a pimple. It's popping the zit, right? There's the anticipation, and then boom! How it goes!
I want to barf, dude.
First of all,
I agree. That's nasty.
It's rootedness.
Secondly, if we run the league, we need to start doing a better job.
Yeah, don't say that, JC.
It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2009, then Winnipeg Blue Bombers head coach Mike Kelly held a press conference to address one of their scouts being ejected from a Hamilton Tiger Cats practice. The embattled coach repeatedly called the matter a, quote, non-issue and insisted that it was being, quote, handled internally. Kelly's comments were a hot-button issue in Winnipeg and typified the dysfunction that plagued him during his one-year stint as the team's head coach. The club went 7-11 under his watch, and he was fired on December 17th of that year when he was arrested and charged with harassment and assault following an alleged domestic dispute in the U.S., though these charges were later dropped when he agreed to take anger management counseling. Winnipeg's chairman at the time, Ken Hildahl, denied that the charges were the reason Kelly was fired, instead citing the poor performance of the team. Dunk, what do you remember about the Mike Kelly era?
That it did not go well. And can presidents just learn to tell the truth? Like, it's so obvious the reason that he was fired. Just say it, man. Like, the fans are not stupid. You know, I know that was back in, 2009? But especially in this day and age, I think this is an example of the fans are not dumb. The hardcore fans know when coaches, player personnel people, presidents, commissioners are lying. Give them the respect of telling them the truth. I just don't understand that lack of reasoning. I was about to swear there, but for letting the guy go, you know, and that era was dysfunctional. I think that was the perfect word for it. I shouldn't even say era, that year.
Yeah, you're spot on with that, Dunk. I think that's a lesson for anyone in management across the CFL or across pro sports. Transparency is key. Just to keep it a little bit lighter, I'll focus on a more positive note with Kelly in terms of his first tenure with Winnipeg as offensive coordinator, because we just passed an important milestone. I believe it was Sunday was the 20th anniversary of the Matt Dunnigan record-setting game where Mike Kelly was the OC and the play caller. 713 yards passing in a single game from Dunnigan with Kelly calling the plays. That is certainly much more impressive than his tenure as head coach.
Just a quick correction. That would be the 30th anniversary, not the 20th anniversary.
That makes sense because it's older than me.
One more thing about the Mike Kelly era. Do either of you know the identity of the scout who was thrown out of this practice?
I do not.
Oh, man. I forgot it.
I do, but I don't want to say it on air unless I confirm it. So check back next week if I can confirm it 100%, because I don't want to spread misinformation. It's now time for the 3-minute drill.
Retta Cramdy and Tobias Harris were assessed maximum fines for headshots on Drew Brown and Chris Dreveler, respectively, in week 5. Did the league get it right?
I do. I do think still that the Harris hit was worse than the Streveler hit. That being said, I don't think either merited a suspension, especially considering these guys are, at least from what I understand, first-time offenders. If it happens again, I think you up it, but max fines, I think, were appropriate in this regard. The BC Lions offered free mullet haircuts during their annual Watermelon Smash game against Saskatchewan. JC, were you tempted to get one?
I don't think if I have quite enough hair right now to get the mullet, but I was really intrigued because they had two options for each side. For Saskatchewan, you could get the Lake Corte Moore or the AJ Ouellette mullet. And if someone asked for the Ouellette mullet, how do you do that? Like, you hair extensions? Do you like take a dirty mop and stick it on their head? Like, that was the question that I had, is how you make that happen if somebody hasn't got that going on already. The Montreal Alouettes drew their strongest French language TV ratings on RDS since 2015 when the Owls beat the Stampeders in week 5. Is that a big deal?
It definitely is. I think this Grey Cup bump that the Alouettes are receiving has shown that it has staying power leading into this season. What surprised me the most about that rating is it was a game against the Calgary Stampeders. It wasn't like it was some TV juggernaut, like let's say the Saskatchewan Roughriders or something like that. But clearly, the Alouettes have done a great job of engaging the French language fan to get them to watch on RDS. Cody Fajardo suffered what appeared to be a hamstring injury against the Argonauts in week 6. Is Montreal pooched if Fajardo misses a significant amount of time?
Well, JC kind of stole my answer to this earlier on, but the last time Cody Fajardo missed time, Caleb Evans went 2-0, right, quarterbacking this team. And one of those wins was an absolute smackdown of the Saskatchewan Roughriders last season in week 10. 41-12 was the final score. So I'm not saying Caleb Evans is on Cody Fajardo's level, but if you got to turn the ball over to Evans for a week or two, Montreal, especially with that defense, with James Letcher Jr. being fantastic, they can tread water with him 100%. Legendary NCAA and NFL coach Chip Kelly was inspired by the CFL when he created his famed zone read offensive system, according to Doug Flutie. Did you know that, JC?
I think everybody knew that the NFL and the NCAA stole a lot of the RPO and zone read concepts from the CFL game, whether or not they'll admit it. What was new information here is Chip Kelly apparently took a trip up to Toronto to watch film with the Argonauts while he was developing that offense. That's something I think that probably happens more than we realize. Coaches visit each other. They go to other facilities in the off season in order to learn and develop new concepts. But we rarely hear about it in the CFL concept. I think this was a brilliant peek behind the curtain. And I certainly have a lot of follow-up questions about how that was organized and what Kelly exactly did when he was in Toronto. But it turned out to be one of the most influential offensive systems in NCAA football history, and one that still has an influence on the NFL after he brought it in with the Philadelphia Eagles. The Toronto Argonauts are currently without a president as Bill Manning and MLSE parted ways. Why did that happen?
To me, this had more to do with him overseeing Toronto FC. He held the same title as president for that soccer club. And I think really, you know, you say that the Argonauts are without a president, but now, you know, the powers that be in the front office for the Argos are going to report directly to Keith Pelly, the same on the TFC side. And the day before Manning parted ways with MLSE, Toronto FC suffered a loss in the Canadian Championship semifinals to a Canadian Premier League team, Forge FC, which is based out of Hamilton. That game was played at Tim Hortons Field. Now, Forge FC is an absolute dynasty in the CPL, but the fact that an MLS team lost to a CPL team is definitely noteworthy. Toronto FC hired John Herdman, who was a former coach of Canadians men's national soccer team and Canadians women's national soccer team, but they were on a long winless run until after Manning parted ways. The team won 2-1 at home at BMO Field on Saturday. So I think this had more to do with the soccer side, to make it short, than the football side. Hodge Mike O'Shea challenged an incomplete call in week 6, even though he knew his team would lose yardage if he won. Does that even make sense?
No, and if anybody needed evidence as to just how stubborn Mike O'Shea can be, he willfully challenged a 2-yard incompletion just to prove a point. He explained after the game that the official closest to Nick Dembski said it was a catch, and then a different official, presumably the upback, 30 to 40 yards away, waved it off. And just to prove a point, even though it resulted in a loss of 2 yards, Mike O'Shea still challenged. Now, he did admit that it was a stupid decision, so credit to him for at least checking himself there. But yeah, no, you shouldn't do that. You should use your challenges on stuff that helps you. I thought that was common sense, but no, Mike O'Shea is that determined to get it right. The Riders appear to have lost offensive tackle Jamarcus Hardrick to a serious leg injury as he was carted off against BC. If he's out long term, is that a big loss for Saskatchewan?
It's a huge loss for Saskatchewan. Now, I can't speak to the quality of their potential replacements. Dunk probably has more insight on that, but I thought that Hardrick's addition has been one of the key reasons why this team has been so improved this year. There was a reason why they went out and made him the highest paid American offensive lineman in the CFL, and he was delivering at that right tackle spot. To lose him this early on, both from a play standpoint and from just a team culture and energy standpoint, which we all know Yoshi brings, is absolutely devastating. Nathan Rourke was at BC's game on Saturday night, providing you with a chance to drool, Dunk. What was your main takeaway from his interview with TSN?
There were two. I'll get them in real quick and try to wipe the drool away. First was that he still believes there's a chance for him to play that's present in the NFL, which I fully believe. I think he's in it for the long run. The second and arguably bigger takeaway is that if he comes back to the CFL, he said rather definitively that it would be the BC Lions. Now, perhaps there's a chance that he said that because he was at the Lions game and he's supporting the Lions because that's the only CFL team he's ever known, and that we're backing him in terms of giving him that opportunity to be a starter. Money can change things down the road if he ever did come back up here. But it's very clear to me that first and foremost, his mind is on the NFL. But he talked about how the BC Lions felt like family, and it was a place that he loved playing. And a lot of his family moved out there when he was selected by the BC Lions in the CFL draft. So, you know, I know Vernon Adams Jr. has a contract that runs through 2026 that would create an interesting decision if Rourke was to come back up to the CFL before the end of that deal. But it was very clear, based on what he said at face value, that the BC Lions would be his preferred team to come back to in the CFL.
We thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. We are going to start doing our episodes Monday or Tuesday each week, and then we are going to have a separate short episode with just JC and myself doing our weekly picks. That'll be out either late Wednesday or early Thursday morning. You can also see all of us on YouTube if you would rather check us out there for the video side. We'll see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.